We're learning how to keep our food scraps and yard waste out of landfills, and I think it's time for some composting advice. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we visit with Casey Krasinski, who is the Solid Waste Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. She'll tell us how we can reduce our waste and how we can get a compost bin set up in your backyard. So tell us how you compost. What does your compost pile include? Is it indoors, outdoors? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Casey Krasinski, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
I understand one of the important things you want to touch on today is reducing food waste. How big a problem is food waste in our state?
It's actually a very considerable problem. In 2021, the DNR did what's called a waste characterization study. We looked at how much we're sending to Wisconsin landfills, and we found that the largest of all categories of municipal waste going to landfills is food waste. It was over 20% by weight of everything going to the landfills. And of that food waste, over 70% of it was determined to be previously edible. So it's not even just the scraps that you think of traditionally throwing away for food waste, such as peels or bones, but food that could have been eaten by people. And it has really large climate impacts to produce all of that food and then to send it to the landfill rather than using it for feeding people.
Yeah, so there's a not a great relationship between our environment and food, or maybe I should say, what's the relationship between our environment and food waste?
So, really what we can be thinking of food waste is a major climate issue. And that's because we do throw away so much food, and all of the production, transporting, preparing, storing of the food that we end up not consuming, which is about 35% of all of the food that's intended for human consumption in the U.S., it all takes, you know, resources, water, land, and a lot of energy to produce. And so the production of all of that results in CO2 emissions or carbon dioxide emissions that are the equivalent of running 42 coal-powered energy plants. And so, yeah. And that's before we even get to the fact that then if we put that material in the landfill, even though it's an organic material that, you know, people think is not the worst thing we're putting in the landfill, really what happens is a landfill, you know, we want to keep them as small as possible. You know, no one really wants a landfill near them. So they try and save as much space as possible. And to do that, they compress everything that's going into the landfill and just squeeze all of the oxygen possible out of that environment. And when food waste is put in that oxygen deprived environment, then instead of breaking down how it traditionally would, it breaks down and releases methane. So in addition, then we're releasing a greenhouse gas that's at least 28 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So really what we have is worldwide, the food waste that we're generating is responsible for 8% of all of our greenhouse gas emissions.
So what are people throwing away? I mean, what types of food are commonly thrown away?
When we broke down in our characterization study, like I said, we found that most of what we're talking about is actually food that's traditionally edible and that just, you know, has gone bad or wasn't eaten for some reason. We know that people can, you know, work on reducing any type of food waste that they're generating in, you know, several simple matter means at home. But we also know that throwing away meat and dairy is the most impactful So you really want to be extra cautious with making sure you're using all of those items, because they take the most resources to produce.
And so, you know, food starts to expire. What do you do with your food if it's about to expire? I had some pretty good soup that I wound up putting in the. I didn't throw it away. I put it in the freezer, and I'm actually thawing it out. It's in the refrigerator now, thawing out as we speak, because I'm going to be consuming it in the days ahead.
Excellent job. Yes, that there's a lot of things you could do with food that's about to expire so that it doesn't end up in your garbage bin and then eventually the landfill. For leftovers, absolutely. You know, as soon as you find out that you're probably not going to be eating them again in a timely manner, the best thing to do is put them in the freezer, and then to put them in a freezer in the way that you remember that they're there. So whether that's, you know, keeping a list of leftovers that you have, or, you know, making sure to store them in a clear container or labeled container so that you know. And then there are also great tools online, such as recipe generators. You can find a whole list of them on the DNR's website on our Reducing Residential Food Waste page. But basically what they do is you'll say, you know, I know I have these couple of items in my refrigerator that are starting to go bad, or, you know, I need to use them up soon. And it will give you a recipe recommendation for those items that you can put them in. Things like soups, smoothies, and like any egg dish, like a frittata or a pasta, are great for incorporating, you know, any sort of leftover that's really, you know, about to go bad. But yes, I think you hit the nail on the head with freezing, and that's one of our most helpful tools. And I think people think of leftovers for freezing right away, but it can be used to save so many more food items. Just anything that you use in prep as well that you know, maybe don't have the right size of, such as tomato paste or vegetable broth or, you know, a jar of spaghetti sauce. If, you know, if that's not the right amount for you, you can freeze any of those items. You can freeze bread products. You can even freeze dairy items if you're then going to use them in a manner that the texture doesn't, you know, matter as much. So like a cooked method.
Yeah, tomato paste is one of those. You get even a little can, and they always say, well, 1 tablespoon of tomato paste.
Right.
And then you're looking at this can of tomato paste, and, well, what the heck am I going to do with it?
Absolutely.
I wonder if you could put it in ice cube trays and freeze it that way. Then you could pull the cubes out.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have heard that recommendation before. I think that works well for a lot of people, especially like if you know that when you put them in, you know, the ice cube trays, that they were a tablespoon size or something like that. Really easy for cooking. I stick it in a little Tupperware container in my freezer door, and then I can, you know, put it in the microwave just long enough to get my tablespoon or whatever out and put it back.
Casey Krasinski, our guest today. Here we are talking about, she's the solid waste coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. We're talking, we were starting to talk about composting, and we're going to get to that and really get into the nuts and bolts of that. But first, we need to take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. But what about you? How do you compost? We can talk about those food products and composting them for sure. How do you do it? You can give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back right after this look at the news. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, learning more about composting with our guest, Casey Krasinski, with us. She's the Solid Waste Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. And as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Give us a question about composting. What do you want to know? Yeah, wish your city or town had a community composting program. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Casey, we already have a number of emails in, but I just for one or two basics, hot and cold composting. What's the difference between hot and cold composting?
So traditional composting, that is what you think of in a bin or a backyard pile, or a large-scale composting, should all be generating heat. What compost actually, the process of how compost is made or what's happening there is you get a good mix of carbon-rich materials and nitrogen-rich materials, which are the carbon-rich, we call them composting browns, and they're typically wood chips, dried leaves, and things like paper products. And then the nitrogen-rich materials would be most of your food wastes or your green yard waste, like grass clippings or fresh plant trimmings. When you get a mix of those, as well as a little bit of moisture and a good amount of oxygen, then you get the right habitat for microorganisms, which eat those feedstocks and leave a much more stable, volume-reduced, finished compost that's very rich in organic material. It's great to add to your compost for soil stability, for increasing the amount of water retention that you have, for increasing nutrients in your soil. So that's a hot compost. Some people, I'm not exactly sure with what terms you're going through, but traditionally you want to turn either with a compost turner that can spin, or if you just have a stacked pile, you would want to like turn it with a pitchfork or something similar to keep those materials mixing, and that will keep the compost active and hot. Some people think of cold composting as being, if they're just going to really, it's kind of called lasagnaing.
Yeah.
The compost materials, where you just put a layer of the carbon rich or the compost browns, and then a layer of the nitrogen rich and back and forth. And you don't have to do any work, and it takes longer. Probably will take a couple of years to really have finished compost. But that's one term for cold composting. Other people may be considering that vermicomposting, which is composting with worms. And that is something that takes less space, where you're really using worms in place of the microorganisms. And those worm casings are what you get as the organic rich material.
Wenzel in Amherst has something. Let's go to Wenzel. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, as I'm listening, the guest was kind of describing my cold composting method, and I kind of tired of this idea of having to turn this stuff all the time, because I have a pretty big bed. You know, it's like 3x6. And I got two of them, you know, on either side of a path in the back of our garden area. And then I got some steel pipes on the corners, you know, and I cobbled together some boards as I add stuff. And then, you know, I figure it this way. Come the following year, it's been sitting, you know, for some of it, not a whole year, but from the beginning it is. Then when I'm digging it out to, you know, put it in my garden or the flower beds in 5-gallon buckets or whatever else, well, then I kind of regard that as turning it. And, you know, you're chopping down and little twigs are flying, but it seems to generally be pretty well mixed up. And, you know, these books I've read, I'm pretty close to, you know, or whatever, newspapers in the garden or the house wastes and stuff, no meat in that. But I was going to also say the one thing that works for us is we got a 5-gallon bucket in a kind of like a broom closet in the back of our, by the utility room, and I got it either lined with lime or a little dirt. And then it can take 2 weeks to put enough junk in that bucket, you know, coffee grounds and whatnot, and then out it goes, and you know, I distribute as best I can in the, and then I cover it out there with dirt. So I think I have a slightly higher dirt ratio in my compost than maybe technically it should have. But if you ever saw the stuff I can grow, why, it must be doing the job.
All right. Thanks for calling. Comment on that, Casey.
Sure. I love the caller's comments because he hit on a couple of things that everyone should make sure to do, but also pointed out, you know, this is what works for him. And I think that is the beauty of home composting is there's a lot of different ways of doing it based on, you know, what your needs are. And you can experiment and try different things. But the caller did mention, for example, when he fills up his in-home bucket and takes it outside, he's covering it right away. The one of the biggest issues, you know, people are concerned about with compost is odors or maybe attracting some sort of pests. And once you're actively composting and you have this good mix of carbon and nitrogen materials and the right amount of moisture and oxygen in there, compost really should not have any odors. It should maybe smell a little earthy, I guess, but it, you know, shouldn't have any negative odors. And it should not be attracting pests. And we could, you know, touch on some issues, if, you know, and how to fix them maybe if you are having them. But what may be, you know, odorous is if you're piling things up in your kitchen to take outside, you'll want to get that material covered and incorporated with those carbon-rich materials right away, because that's how you will knock down the odors. And just as a reminder, those may, you know, seem like smelly items in your kitchen, but they're the things that would have been in your garbage bag anyway that you're taking out. So as long as you're taking that out at the same frequency you were taking your garbage out before you started separating food waste for composting, you really shouldn't be seeing, you know, any additional work.
Paula emailed us. She lives in a condo and doesn't have a composting system. She's restarted a worm bin to use up her veggie scraps. If you do composting and vermicomposting right, you don't have any smell. So she's agreeing with you.
Absolutely, yes. Vermicomposting can be really good for small space solutions or, you know, if you don't have outdoor space. There are a couple of other interesting solutions out there now as well. One is really, they call them bokashi composters. It's really more of a fermentation process that you can do fully indoors to break down food waste, which is another way of keeping it out of the landfill. And then, you know, if people feel like they're space limited or they don't want to do their own composting, we are seeing just a large increase in what we call subscription service composters. So that's people who will come, you know, to your house. Or, you know, some of them are done by drop-off, and they will take food waste and yard waste from customers, do a large-scale compost operation with them, and a lot of them then also have an exchange program for finished compost if you want. But it's great. I was just looking. We have a list of these service providers that we know of on our DNR's composting website, and I counted that we have 15 of these services across the state. They're not just in, you know, Madison and Milwaukee, the bigger cities. They're all the way from, you know, Sister Bay and Stevens Point and Ashland. So definitely, if that's something of interest to you, take a look at those service providers as a way that you can compost without doing it yourself.
Elaine emailed us, is anything being done with composting the fruits and vegetables that are not sold by grocery stores? I'm sure there's ways connected with that, some ways.
Absolutely. There is a lot of food waste generated at the grocery stores. Part of that is, you know, a cultural standard that we have where we pick only the prettiest fruits and vegetables. And so a lot of them need to be disposed of, even though there's nothing wrong with them. There's actually a lot of movements at grocery stores in Europe called the Ugly Foods Movement, which is where they'll actually sell some misshapen produce, for example, for slightly less to encourage people to buy this perfectly good and healthy food. But, you know, no matter what, grocery stores do end up with waste of that produce. Where they are grocery stores and grocery store chains that have started to work with some of these large-scale composters, these subscription service providers, to collect the food waste that they're generating and get that composted rather than landfilled. There's also some, you know, the same thing that we started off with households. The first thing that they want to do is work on reducing the amount of food waste that they're generating at grocery stores. And so there are new tools about really helping to gauge the amount of produce purchased and how much is being thrown away to really help grocery stores with purchasing just what is needed. And then a lot of grocery stores are also looking at, when you see their prepared materials, things like, you know, their own in-house juices or smoothies or soups. A lot of that is using produce, you know, before it is goes bad that hasn't been purchased right away as well. Mm. So, you know, there's economic benefits to trying to reduce your food waste as a business. And so we're trying to get the word out about that and provide businesses with some additional resources to help them really track what they are generating and see the benefits of reducing that.
Jonathan has a question about eggshells. Why do eggshells apparently survive being in compost for years and years? Does the plant benefit from the calcium, or do you need to dissolve the eggshells in vinegar for the plant to use it, or what?
Sure. So eggshells are something that are slower to compost for sure. There's, you don't need to dissolve them in anything. You could break them up into smaller pieces before putting them in your compost bin, and that will help a lot. There's also not really a problem with if you spread your compost and you have small bits of eggshell in it, it won't create a problem like some other unfinished materials. So, you know, as long as you are breaking them up beforehand, you'll see a reduction in that volume, and then go ahead and use it when the rest of your compost is finished. Yeah, it is just because of the calcium, a slow to break down material, and really there's a large difference between, you know, small scale, your backyard compost, and an industrial compost. And there are quite a few items that break down better in that large scale compost that just generates more heat. And so in addition to eggshells, which, you know, you're just going to have little bits of eggshells, maybe if, you know, left in your finished compost. One that I wanted to touch on is being careful with is any certified compostable material. That would be, you know, packaging items that, you know, have it's usually a BPI or a Cedar Grove certification saying that that's compostable. And the testing for that to make sure it's broken down all the way to the molecular level is for large scale industrial composts. So they're not certifying that that will break down in your small household compost. Mm-hmm. And you'll want to make sure that you're not putting those items in there because you'll end up with the small bits of packaging still in your finished compost. Whereas a large scale compost will be able to handle those materials.
Kind of related to that, Tom from Fox Point emailed us. They just started composting using rotary bins, and the instructions called for two parts brown compost to one part green. The green is the typical kitchen waste, but they have a hard time meeting the brown compost materials needed for a proper mix. They tried straw as a convenient source, but that seems to be too physically heterogeneous to make a good mix as it's decomposing. They generate some sawdust, but not nearly enough to meet the two parts recommended. Any suggestions?
Sure. What I like to do with my home compost is, and, you know, again, this is getting back to different things work for different people. So someone else calling in may have another recommendation, but we have a double bin turner. And so we empty one side in spring and one side in the fall into our garden. And with the side that we just emptied in fall, I fill it up with our dried crushed leaves as a great carbon rich material that's ready for our food scraps then going into the rest of winter. Wood chips are another great material. It'll actually work better than sawdust just because it also is adding some structure to your compost, and so more airflow can get through. So if you, you know, are raking and you have just twigs and small sticks like that, definitely those would be a great addition. You can also add clean paper products, you know, if they can be recycled. It's not great to put them in the compost anyway, but for example, if you had a, you know, paper towels that were used for non-oily or greasy spills to clean up and didn't have chemical cleaners on them, you could put those in your compost and they would really add to your carbon volume.
Ross in Crawford County doesn't have a compost pile available. They live in a condo. What about just grinding non-meat and dairy products up and putting them, you know, making a slurry out of it and putting it around plants?
I think that that seems very reasonable to me. I'll be honest that in my role, I haven't, I don't know exactly what the recommendations would be for that. But what I would recommend is taking a look at UW Extension, where they have, you know, Master Gardener courses, and seeing if that's a recommendation. But it seems very reasonable to me.
Craig in Grafton emailed us. He says he keeps his compost indoors under his sink, but it's really, really smelly. It's just a regular plastic ice cream tub. He should probably move it to a different container, maybe?
Sure, yeah. It's not clear from the question if he's actually composting under the sink or he's just, I think, storing to take it out to his compost. So a few things that I would recommend is, first of all, they make indoor compost collector bins that have a little carbon filter on them to help with odors. That may be helpful. Also, putting some carbon-rich materials such as shredded paper or, you know, sawdust or something, you know, those paper-molded egg cartons at the bottom to help absorb liquids while you're waiting to take that material outside. Would be helpful. And then just taking it outside more frequently, I think, would be helpful. If you are working, for example, with a subscription service and they just collect once a week, there are a lot of people who recommend storing halfway, you know, when they get halfway through the week and want to empty their indoor collection container. They actually will store it in their freezer, bagged up, waiting for the collection just to prevent odors.
And on your webs, talk a bit about what people could find out about solid waste and composting on the DNR website.
Great. We have a couple pages that I want to draw attention to. So if you go to dnr.wi.gov to get to the DNR's homepage, and then one that I would recommend searching is Reducing Food Waste at Home. That gets to some of the climate details that we were talking about and a lot more tips on how to properly store food in your refrigerator or how to plan for gatherings to reduce food waste and shopping with a plan, things like that, that are really beneficial. And then we also have a Composting in Wisconsin page that you can search. It will break down those subscription service lists that I mentioned if you want to find one of those, as well as the different recommendations we have for both backyard and large-scale composting. And one of the things we have on there for backyard composting, which is really great, is all different ways and shapes that you can build your own, like composting corral, depending on what works for you. And so that's a great resource.
And you do have the list of the subscription services, and people could learn more on that site too, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Casey, to talk with you today. I really appreciate you taking the time. I think we got through most everything we needed, but there were some other things we didn't get to, so maybe you can come back and be with us again. Love to have you back.
Wonderful. That would be great.
Casey Krasinski, our guest today, the Solid Waste Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. And as she was saying, there's lots of good information on that DNR website that can help you out with your composting questions and issues, as a matter of fact. Well, let's take a look ahead to tomorrow on the Larry Mueller Show. It's another edition of our book club. We're talking about The Art of the Break. It's a novel about cheese making, about family loss and working toward your dreams. And so that'll be the first hour. And then from 12 to 12:30, we'll hear from some real life cheese makers. And we're broadcasting from Paoli, so we'll be looking at the 7-acre farm business that's working out of Paoli as well with our guests. So that's going to be a lot of fun. In the meantime, thank you so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.